I was asked recently at a darshan session, we're having lots of darshan sessions at this time of year. There's one every day this phase. And what's the most important advice you could give us all? I think it was a group of about 12 or so, very large family. What's the most important advice you could give us all? And as many of you know, one of my favorite pieces of advice is daily practice. That I really became aware of it and working with a group of Hindu University students, the Hindu Students Association, headquartered in Texas and in some of the, it's also in some of the states surrounding Texas. And I was working with the original group for maybe about 4 years, so I got to know them, and it's very interesting. I think I learned more from them than they learned from me, but such is the nature of teaching. And one of the things I learned from them is that here they were in the university for 4, 6, 8 years, and almost all of them had no daily practice. They weren't practicing Hinduism. And it was a sincere group, because right in the middle of the school year, they would take 2 days off every February to, I'm glad I'm not going this February, it's a lot of snow out there. Take 2 days off in February for a weekend retreat, and very serious about studying Hinduism. So they were serious about being Hindus. And but still, they had no daily practice, almost all of them. And they weren't going to a temple, most of them, because usually there's no temple near the university within walking distance. So here for 4, 6, 8 years, they're not practicing anything. What happened? In India, it's common to take up a practice in the teenage years. That's the time it's traditionally done. You receive some type of Upanayana, receive Gayatri Mantra. Some people do Sandhya Vandana. Daily practice is taken up, but somehow that part of Hinduism didn't move to the U.S. or Canada. It stayed in India. So we got beautiful temples, wonderful priests, great philosophy, but somehow the emphasis on practice has been left behind. To emphasize the importance of practice, I always use the Hindu classical dance, because everyone understands that. What do you have to do to be a good dancer? And everyone knows the answer, and the answer is practice, of course. And it's not just practice, it's daily practice. That to master dance, you have to work at it every single day. Oh, spiritual progress is even more subtle than dance. Therefore, it requires more consistency to really make progress. We came out with our app. These days, if it doesn't exist on a digital device, for many people it doesn't exist. What we experience is limited to what comes over our smartphone or our tablet. So we're getting our Gurudeva's teachings more in that world, and one of the accomplishments is our spiritual workout. The publisher's desk was called a 10-minute spiritual workout, but the app is just called Spiritual Workout. And it's very popular for our type of material. Thousands of people are using it. And it's trying to make it easy to remember to do at least 10 minutes. That's our starting goal. It's just a 10-minute practice. Until one finishes university. And then after university, we suggest expanding it to half an hour, which is the amount of practice Guru Davis suggests in the Master Course Trilogy. He says, start with half an hour. Then, of course, for those who are initiated, we're up to an hour. I was recollecting once when Guru Davis first started the 3-hour vigil for monks back in somewhere in the 1970s, right? I imagine early 1970s. He also asked the family people to do it. Can you believe that? Family people were doing 3 hours a day vigil. Life must not have been as busy then, I don't know. Well, the family people managed 3 hours a day, but they had a balanced life worksheet, and you had to fill it in every week and send it in, and it was 3 hours a day vigil, half an hour a day exercise, so on and so forth. Then Gurudeva reduced it to an hour. That was a big relief, I'm sure. But 3 hours is great if you're retired. But otherwise, it's too much in today's busy world. Okay, well, we got past our time to start. Reading today from Path to Shiva, Lesson 36, What is Our Heritage of Gurus? Since the beginning of time, the power or Shakti of God Shiva has been carried forth by enlightened beings, Satgurus. That power is like a brilliant ray of spiritual energy. Many of these masters trained other great souls and passed on their power to them. As this happened again and again for thousands of years, many chains of gurus, called parampara, were formed. Our lineage is called the Kailasa Parampara. It means the lineage from Shiva's Himalayan mountain, Kailas. Began thousands of years ago. The first master that history records is Maharishi Nandinatha, 250 BCE. He passed his power to Rishi Tirumular, a sage who wrote a yoga text called Tirumandaram. After him, over 150 rishis carried the Shakti of Shiva forward, their names lost to history. In the 19th century, a nameless Himalayan rishi of this lineage traveled to Bengaluru in South India. There he passed the thread of power to Kadait Swami and sent him to Sri Lanka to strengthen Saivism there. Kadait Swami passed his power to sage Chelappa Swami. He in turn initiated Satguru Yogaswami. In 1949, Yogaswami ordained our guru, Sivaya Subramunya Swami. Gurudeva brought Saivism to the West and established Kauai Adinam, his monastery on the Hawaiian island of Kauai in 1970. In 2001, he initiated Bodhinatha Valan Swami as his successor. The power from all previous gurus and the blessings of the devas that assist them abide in the current preceptor. And we have Gurudeva's quote here. Hindu temples sustain Hinduism around the world. Scriptures keep us always reminded of the path we are on and the path we are supposed to be on. But only from the Satguru can you get the spirit, the Shakti, the sustaining spirit, to make it all come to life in you, to make the temple meaningful, and to complement the scriptures with your own sight, your own third eye sight. As you know, we have a Yogaswami shrine in our Guru Temple, and we have words of our master there. Every day I go over and read one verse of Words of Our Master to see what Yogaswami's wisdom is for the day. And this was his wisdom last day of the last phase. There is happiness when we look inwards, and unhappiness when we look outwards. But the truth is present in the unhappiness as well as in the happiness. The changing universe keeps on changing all the time. That which causes the change and remains unchanged, that is the truth. Oh, that's similar to what we read the last lesson. It was talking about Sat, Satguru. Sat is the truth. Asat is that which changes, and Sat is that which doesn't change. That first phrase there, there is happiness when we look inwards. We all know that, but it's easy to forget it. It's easy for life to take away the happiness that we can get from going within. There's a verse in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras which gives two items we need to do to make progress towards samadhi. Abhyasa, which is practice, which we talked about, and vairagya, or dispassion. When we take vairagya to the extreme, then we have a sannyasa. So that's not what we want to do if we're not a sannyasin, right? That's going too far. What's the right amount of vairagya or dispassion for someone who's a householder? Well, to me, it's this idea. Said another way, vairagya means we're not looking for happiness outside of ourselves. That's vairagya. We're detached enough from the world not to be looking to the world to make us happy. So vairagya is detachment from the world. So in this case, we're detached enough to not be trying to get happiness outside of ourselves, from other people, from money, from anything in the world. We're getting the happiness from inside ourselves. Oh, that's what Yogaswami is saying. There is happiness when we look inwards. Gurudeva has a phrase that echoes a similar message. Life is meant to be lived joyously. Again, it's easy to know that, but to forget to do it. Oh, we need to claim it every day. And a couple times a day, too. Life is meant to be lived joyously. We don't realize that we have an ability to control our awareness sometimes when we get into the midst of challenging times, but it's there. And similar to that idea of peace. Many people, when they come here, one of the things they say is, besides the temple is really powerful vibration, they say, oh, this is such a peaceful place. It's so wonderful. I feel so peaceful here. Well, that's good. You come here and you feel peaceful. But we need to learn to find the peace even inside ourselves, even when it's not peaceful on the outside. That's the harder part, you know, in the midst of a really big city with all this activity. It's easy to get tense and stressed. We need to be able to find the peace there as well. That's kind of stage two of peace. So Gurudev is telling us life is meant to be lived joyously, and that means in all environments, not just the peaceful environment. We need to be able to find it wherever we are, and it's inside of us if we can learn to control our awareness. Then there's one more message I was grabbing from the gurus. And it's the idea, Jalapa Swami says, Namaryom, which means we do not know. And it's an interesting idea. Usually the goal is to learn something thoroughly. So you get a new computer and you read the manual and you've learned. You're able to explain the computer very well. So in that case, you know all about the computer. But Jalpa Swami is saying, we do not know. So what's he trying to say? Well, he's trying to say that, you know, we can explain what's inside of us, what we experience up to a certain point. We can say, well, I go inside and I see a brilliant inner light. Okay, that's good. But when we get really deep inside, you can't explain it. So we do not know. And Yoga Swami had a similar idea. He says, even the great Shankara couldn't explain the truth. And of course, Gurudeva says, the self, you can't explain it. So it's very interesting, the similarities in the teachings. We don't have a lot of teachings from Jalapa Swami for Mahavakyam and stories and all, but you, even the small amount we have, you can see the similarities in the way the gurus explain things. They don't try and explain the deepest truth. They just try and lead you there. And then you need to experience it, and then you won't be able to explain it either. I went there, I experienced it. What can you tell me about it, right? Nothing. Well, is it worth experiencing? Yes, but... So the deepest truth can't be experienced, and therefore, what does that logically mean? Well, it means we're not trying to be super intellectuals about the deepest experiences. We're not trying to explain it, you know, either by quoting someone else's writings or by creating our own writings. We're not trying to explain the unexplainable, just trying to help those who are sincere figure out where to go to experience it. Oh, thank you very much for listening. We'll close the live streaming, it's called.